May it please the court, my name is Tucker Isaacson, and I represent Nathaniel Lee Betzler, the appellant in this case. Mr. Betzler was committed as a sexually dangerous person and a sexual psychopathic personality on August 24th, 2023. Following the trial, post-trial motions were brought primarily to try to get him placed in a less restrictive alternative, that being the Alpha Emergence Program. The lower court denied these motions. Mr. Betzler now seeks to reverse the lower court's decision committing him, or on the alternative, reverse the decision denying him access to the Alpha Emergence Program. Mr. Betzler relies primarily on his brief for the majority of his arguments, but there are a few points that should be discussed further. At trial, Mr. Betzler offered the testimony of Rhonda Dish and two ISR agents, along with two court-appointed examiners. A majority of this evidence went towards him wanting to go to the Alpha Emergence Program, which is a less restrictive alternative. In denying Mr. Betzler's request, the lower court issued a 67-page order or judgment, and less than one page discussed less restrictive alternatives for Mr. Betzler. And that's what Mr. Betzler is appealing, is that short paragraph denying him access to Alpha Emergence. For a less restrictive alternative,
Well, in fairness, I mean, you're right. The express findings with respect to less restrictive alternatives are relatively few, but they are based on other findings throughout the district court's order with respect to your client's compliance or lack thereof with ongoing sex offender treatment in violation of his ISR conditions, correct?
that's correct, Your Honor. It is based on other things in the record, but a large portion of the evidence that Mr. Betzler offered is not in the order or wasn't considered or wasn't given the proper weight, as the examiners and ISR agents, the testimony that they gave is contradicted by evidence that Mr. Betzler provided, that in his opinion, and it is more reliable. So for a less restrictive alternative, Mr. Betzler needed to prove by clear and convincing evidence four elements: that a program was available, that it was willing to accept him, that it could meet his treatment needs and the needs of public safety, or that he wasn't dangerous to the public. So there's no issue with the first two elements. Alpha Emergence is a program that is available to Mr. Betzler, and they were willing to accept him immediately. There was a plan in place to take him from the jail to Alpha and then have him set up there until they were transitioning to a new format, and then they were going to place him at 180 Degrees or one of their affiliate housing programs with 24/7 supervision. So the two portions that the lower court said he didn't meet were that the lower court was unsure if they could meet his treatment needs or the needs of public safety. And those are the two elements that Mr. Betzler is appealing today.
Mr. Isaacson, before you turn to those, which I want to hear, can you remind us what his experience was with Alpha relative to the filing of this petition? I mean, he
Mr.
had been in
Betzler
the
spent,
program.
oh, sure. Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Betzler spent, I believe it was a little over a year or over a year at the Alpha program. He progressed more than he ever had in any sex offender treatment program at Alpha. At one point, he made it to the final stage, which was living in the community. He was living with his wife and I believe child at the time in the community. And so he succeeded well and was progressing through with that program. He also never got kicked out of the program. The reason, and Ms. Dish testified to this at trial, that he wasn't allowed to remain in the program was because he was brought to jail because of these commitment proceedings. And so there was nothing that he ever did to get released from the program. It was just because of this commitment that he couldn't continue doing his treatment there. And he did succeed there.
What does
So.
the record tell us, Mr. Isaacson, about how the 24 hours of supervision that Alpha Emergence anticipates will be provided by some other service provider? How does that coordinate with the secure environment at MSUP?
So Ms. Dish testified that there's 24/7 supervision. What this means is while he's at his housing, he can't go outside. And if he does go outside, the police get immediately called. So he's under supervision there. And then they bring him to Alpha, and he has over 40 hours a week of treatment at Alpha, which is more than he would get at the MSOP. The MSOP is a locked, it's a secure facility. It is, I mean, essentially a prison that treats people with sex addictions. And so it is a, I guess, more secure facility because the doors are constantly locked and you can't, you have far less movement there. But at no point would Mr. Betzler ever not be under some form of supervision if he were not at the MSOP.
And Mr. Isaacson, the super, I know that there was discussion about and testimony about the transition of the way that Alpha is offering its program, but even before it was relying on non-Alpha housing, it was not a secure facility. In other words, it was not a secure facility like MSOP, even when it offered its own housing. Is that right? It was monitored and supervised, but
It's my understanding that the MSOP is the only actual locked facility, secure facility in the state of Minnesota. A less restrictive alternative isn't the secure facility, and so it's not a locked facility, but there is supervision that would keep the public safe, which is the other the larger portion that Mr. Betzler is opposing today. But as far as treatment for Mr. Betzler, Ms. Dish described the program extensively for the court. They structure a plan, they individualize it for Mr. Betzler. They'll take him if he's under commitment. She testified that they'll use the examiner's reports in this case to make a plan for him to address any concerns that the court has or that the examiners had. As I said, Mr. Betzler's been through the program and succeeded there, and he wants to stay there. He felt safe contacting them if he ever had any struggles or was seeking help. They
Is it
offered them.
though, I mean, is it fair? Wouldn't there be enough in the record to fairly conclude that it actually wasn't success there if the violations occurred even while he was there in Alpha? Which I
So,
assume they did, right? The ISR violations.
yeah, yes, Your Honor. They were ISR technical violations, which is what I can get into later. Is what he violated. Anytime he had an issue, he would contact Alpha and discuss these violations or issues with them. But that doesn't mean that he wasn't succeeding in the treatment there. Anybody in treatment is going to have a bad day and need help, and Alpha was helping him. The problem is these technical violations were just violations of ISR rules, which are arbitrary rules that if I did them, I wouldn't get in any trouble. They're just rules of his parole that he violated. But
But
being a
Mr.
technical
Isaacson, I want to, I guess, d dive down a little deeper in that. You call them technical violations, but some of the violations are your client viewing pornography, which I think he candidly admitted during the evidentiary hearing is part of his offending cycle. So I'm having a hard time accepting your characterization of those violations as technical. Can you help me with that?
Sure, Your Honor. A technical violation does not, in the lower court and the county also have an issue with the word technical violations. That's what the ISR agents call them. And the definition is a violation that does not have a new victim. It's not a new crime. He views pornography. It's not violent pornography as has been viewed in other cases. It's legal. And the only reason he was able to get it was because the ISR agents gave him a phone to look at it. But they're technical because they don't have a victim, is essentially what it is. Mr. Betzler hasn't had a new victim or a new crime in over 13 years, which goes to the dangerousness element of this case. But that part is very important here. ISR supervision, as was presented to the lower court, has a 99% success rate. Their website, the government or the Department of Corrections say there's a less than 1% chance of somebody on ISR committing a new felony offense and failing ISR. And so he has a less than 1% chance of committing a new offense while being supervised by the intensive supervised release. So essentially, he can't commit a new crime. A less than 1% chance does not mean that the public is in any danger whatsoever. And that's on top of him not having committed a new offense for over 13 years and having 24/7 supervision through Alpha in his own housing.
It sounds, Mr. Isaacson, that you're really asking this court to say the district court weighed the evidence incorrectly. Because I appreciate that I Ms. Dish's testimony, the ISR agent's testimony, but you have that up against the examiner's testimony that they didn't believe the proposed treatment at Alpha would meet your client's treatment needs or public safety. How do we avoid reweighing the evidence if we are to rule in your favor?
Sure, Your Honor. Thank you. As far as the treatment goes, both examiners testified that they knew nothing about alpha. They actually didn't have less restrictive alternatives as a section in their examination reports at all. It just wasn't in there. All they were looking at was whether or not he should go to the MSOP. And so they didn't look at whether or not a less restrictive alternative was available. And then they testified that they didn't know anything about what alpha does. They don't know about what treatment they provide. They had their records, but they didn't look into the program at all. So then we have Ms. Dish testify that about the extensive treatment that she offers. And then the examiners testify that they don't know about the program, but they don't think it's good enough, but they don't have any information about it. Dr. Marshall actually testified that Alpha wouldn't take Mr. Betzler because or if he was under a commitment. And that was just not true. She testified about something she knew nothing about and was wrong about it. Ms. Dish testified that they would take him under a commitment and that they would use his commitment to structure a plan for him and individualize to him. And so it's not so much weighing the evidence, it's that they didn't have any evidence submitted at all that Alpha wouldn't meet his treatment needs. We had the head of the facility saying that it could, and she testified to every element, but these examiners didn't look at it and they didn't know about it and actually testified incorrectly about it. As far as the ISR agents testified, Mr. Betzler's ISR agents testified that they weren't sure if he was safe in the community and that they didn't have any of the statistics in front of them. But the fact that's presented against that is that they are 100% successful currently in preventing Mr. Betzler from committing a new crime. He has not committed a new crime for over 13 years, and he's been under ISR that whole time that he's been out. And they testify that he's going to continue being under ISR for the foreseeable future. And so even if his own agents are skeptical if he's dangerous to the public, the statistic is he's less than 1% likely to do anything, and he hasn't done anything to harm the public in any way. And so it's not so much weighing the evidence, it's that the ISR agents don't know what their own agency is telling the public, and the examiners didn't know about Alpha to begin with.
It
And so
almost
that's
seemed,
what.
Mr. Isaacson, in reading your brief and especially, it almost seemed like you were proposing a per se rule based on the statistics that you rely on from corrections, that if you're on ISR, you cannot, by definition, pose a danger to the public. Could you speak to that?
And I understand that that is an extreme stance to take, especially in a court of appeals case. But if the statistic is you have a less than 1% chance of committing a new crime, and the statute says that you can't be a danger to public safety, and public safety is only in danger if a new crime is committed, then you can't commit the crime, then I guess it's a contradiction to say that you can, even though you can't.
Mr. Isaacson, how does this general statistic about less, 1% or less of people on ISR commit a new crime, how does that stack up against the actuarial tools that were used here that assessed your client's risk of committing future sexual harm in the above average risk category?
Sure, Your Honor. First, at no point in their reports did they look at whether or not, or look at Mr. Betzler's 13 years of non-committance of a new offense. They just take his, general information about him that he's, a middle-aged person who's done this before, and then they give their opinion. But they don't look at, oh, I lost my train of thought. Can you repeat the question, Your Honor?
Well, I was just asking you to kind of compare the statistics that are out there with respect to your client. When we have, on the one hand, the general risk of committing new crimes 1% or less for ISR people versus the actuarial tools that scored your client as having an above average risk of committing future sexual harm.
So the actuarial tools, they just say that this person might, at some point in the future, maybe commit a new crime. Dr. Marshall, Dr. Doherty were both asked about their actuarial tools, and I asked them, "Can you tell me when Mr. Betz is going to commit a new crime?" And they couldn't. And I asked, "Do you think, I mean, is it possible that he may never commit a new crime?" And they said, "Yes. If you're at a higher likelihood of committing a new crime, that's what this tells you. But being under the intensive supervision of ISR prevents you from ever doing that. Should he be out in the community without any safeguards or people watching over him whatsoever, then that's cause for concern, and having the examiner's report's important. But being under ISR, can I finish my answer, Your Honor?
You may, and you will also have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. But being under ISR takes any issue that he would have or any concern that the examiner has away because of their extremely high success rate that is shown to the public as being so successful.
All right.
Thank
Thank you,
you.
counsel. Counsel for respondent, you may proceed.
Thank you. Nathan Crow, appearing on behalf of the Stearns County Attorney's Office and Stearns County Attorney, or Stearns County Human Services, the petitioners in the initial matter. May it please the court, Mr. Isaacson. The matter before the court this morning, as Mr. Isaacson explained, is essentially comes down to, I think, whether there is sufficient evidence to support the lower court's decisions. The trial court judge, in extensive findings in both the initial judgment following the contested hearing, as well as in the extensive order issued following Mr. Betzler's motions for a new trial and judgment notwithstanding of the verdict, or judgment notwithstanding, there is ample evidence that was before the trial court to allow the court to make the decision that was made in this matter. The reversal should only be if, based on a review of the entire record, the appellate court is left with firm and definite conviction that a mistake has been made. As has been discussed both in the briefing as well as in arguments this morning, there was a period of delay between, not of delay, but a period, long period of time had passed between Mr. Betzler's last conviction and the filing of the commitment petition in this matter. And in the brief before, or in appellant's brief, he notes that the court, as well as the petitioner, misapplied the principle, or not the principles, but the test for evaluation in Crosby, which deals with a long period of delay between a last conviction and a commitment petition. In Crosby, there was a lengthy period of time, but the court in Crosby went back as far as the early 70s for a petition for as far back as the early 1970s in considering a course of harmful sexual conduct that for a petition that was filed in, and I may get this wrong, too, I believe 2011. So there, and Crosby notes, which I think is particularly relevant to the matter before the court, that, and to quote from Crosby, it examines whether the offender's relevant sexual history and recent sexual conduct exposes a developing story that will, if unaltered, likely culminate in harmful sexual conduct. And what is at issue, I think, that, or what is of concern based on Mr. Betzler's conduct while at Alpha Emergence and under ISR, were his repeated avoidance of supervision, his accessing of pornography, while Mr. Isaacson notes that the pornography or pornographic materials that he accessed were not illegal. There is still substantial concern. The examiners had concerns that the accessing of the pornography was, in fact, part of Mr. Betzler's offending cycle.
But
So,
Mr. Crow, let me ask you this. I mean, I think there's a difference between what are Mr. Bettler's treatment needs, where he would be more effectively treated, versus public safety and less restrictive alternatives. Isn't the ISR testimony of the ISR agents the fact that since his release from prison, I think January of 2021, no new crimes? I mean, isn't that pretty powerful evidence to support Betzler's argument that there is a less restrictive alternative that would, especially when with ISR being a part of that alternative, that would protect the safety and of the public and give him the treatment he needs?
Your Honor, that is a powerful argument. My response to that would be that while there were no new offenses, that there were multiple incidents of avoidance of supervision and Mr. Betzler trying to essentially decide how he wanted, I would argue, how he wanted to be supervised and how he wanted to proceed through treatment. And while Mr. Isaacson describes it as Mr. Betzler has good reasons or explanations for his behavior, I don't think that reduces the concerns of somebody on ISR in a treatment program trying to avoid supervision and engaging in conduct that is part of his offending cycle. But I, Your Honor, you're absolutely right. I can't ignore that Mr. Betzler did have the opportunity that many people in his position as a respondent in a sex offender petition, he did have the opportunity to be in the community, which many of these respondents do not have because they go immediately from prison. And I can't ignore that that is powerful evidence, but my concern is the repeated incidents of avoidance of supervision and avoidance and breaking the rules. While the breaking of those rules may not have had new victims, I think there is ample evidence before the court to show that even though there were no new victims, this certainly could have led to additional victims in the future if that behavior had continued.
So, Mr. Crow, and I appreciate and understand the context about this is not a typical case where someone has that much time in a community before the commitment. And when I'm looking at Crosby, and I might be wrong about it, but it seems like there was a reoffense. Like it might have gone deep into the history of the Mr. Crosby, but there was an offense close to the petition. I don't see case law cited to us where there's something quite like this, where there is so much time between, including, of course, community time, not just incarceration. I assume, I mean, maybe there's a good case you can point to. Crosby doesn't quite get there in a way. It might have gone deep in the past, but it had a present. And I also wonder, I mean, so if there is something more that we should focus on, I'm sure it's in your brief, but let me know case law wise. But also, how long can you tell me when prior to the petition, when was the last period of incarceration? I know there was like, I know like half of the time I think of those period of time was spent incarcerated, but I'm not sure if those were, I mean, I don't recall right now if those were different periods. I think so, in and
Yes.
out, in other words.
Your Honor, that is correct. There were different periods, and I am sorry, I do not have directly in front of me the most recent time that Mr. Betzler was released from prison. But Your Honor, you're correct. There were periods of time where he was between the 2010 offense and the filing of the petition, there were periods of time where he was both incarcerated and then under supervision in the community. But
Okay, and what
I believe the
prompted?
most I believe the most recent release is 2021. I believe, and I apologize, I don't have that directly in front of me.
Thank you.
Mr. Crow, I just want to follow up with kind of that same line of question. Would you agree at a minimum that it would have been more helpful for us to do meaningful review if the judge would have really honed in, and I'm talking about the less restrictive alternatives, would have really focused on why she didn't believe, despite the unique nature, despite being in the community, despite no crimes, and despite ISR, that would aid us in able to address appellant's concern about the lack of focus of least restrictive alternatives?
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, I think that more focus on the uniqueness certainly would have been useful, but I think what the court was able to do based on the information available through testimony, as the court notes in the decision, that Mr. Isaacson is correct that the examiner's reports did not specifically address the less restrictive alternatives. However, the less restrictive alternatives were specifically addressed in their testimony, and the both examiners, in their opinion, recommended a secure treatment setting, which is only available in Minnesota at MSOP. But Your Honor, you're correct that the trial court judge did not specifically address the unique, well, maybe not unique, or the rare, more rare situation in which we found ourselves. But both examiners were concerned, and some of their concerns were specifically based on the fact that that Mr. Betzler had continued violations in the Alpha program under ISR supervision, which I think in their testimony they address that their concerns that I think essentially he would be returning to the same setting in which there were violations related to his supervision. Mr. Isaacson's correct that Alpha Emergence was certainly willing to take him back, and there is no evidence that Alpha Emergence had, in the most recent time, kicked him out of this program. But both examiners were concerned that based on his conduct while in the program, that would be insufficient to meet his needs.
What is the strongest evidence that Mr. Betzler posed a danger or poses a danger to the public if he were not in a secured setting?
I think the strongest evidence is the analysis from both examiners that Mr. Betzler, it continues to pose a danger. What I think is particularly concerning is that Mr. Betzler acknowledged himself that pornography use was part of his offending cycle, and that his violations, while did not have new victims, those violations did involve accessing and searching for pornography, which the respondent himself acknowledges is part of his offending cycle. And while that had not happened, we don't have the new offense, I think the strongest evidence, in addition to the positions of the examiners, is that the repeated avoidance of supervision and circumventing supervision software or monitoring software to access pornography is that I think there is ample evidence to show that that Mr. Betzler was in fact in an offending cycle, or perhaps was starting an offending cycle. So I think that's what's particularly concerning.
Can you, Mr. Crow, tell me more about what that means and who spoke to that pornography is part of his offending cycle?
Well, Mr. Betzler himself did acknowledge that it was part of his offending cycle. And so, in my understanding, not pretending to be a treatment expert, but I mean, an offending cycle would be that someone is, there's certain behaviors that can lead to the commission, certain behaviors, certain environments, or certain conditions that can lead an offender to reoffense. Dr. Marshall provided testimony related to the offending cycle, that the concern is that once an offender is in that cycle, that they will continue down that path, and eventually that will lead to reoffense. And again, as has been noted, there certainly has been no new offenses that we are aware of in this case, but the concern is that Mr. Betzler was engaging in behavior that in the past had been part of a lead up to a new offense.
Thank you, counsel.
Yeah.
Counsel for appellant, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd just like to address a few things. First, Mr. Betzler learned about his offending cycle in treatment at Alpha, and he's the one who actually reported when he did view the pornography to Alpha and sought help for it. He also asked his ISR agents for more security on his phone because he knew that he was struggling. But again, he
Can I
didn't.
ask about that, Mr. Isaacson? Did he report it without having it been found out by agents? Did
I
he
do not
report it to
believe
Alpha?
that I sorry, Your Honor. I do not believe that he had been caught. I believe he reported a number of violations or rule breaking on his own accord because he wanted to get help for it. He knows that he's not supposed to do it. He described it in his testimony as an addiction, but that's why he's at Alpha. And that's the whole point of him wanting to continue to be there, is because he feels safe asking for help there. I also wanted to address the technical violation procedure. When Mr. Betzler commits a violation of one of ISR's rules, they give him the technical violation. Many times they testified, they don't ask him what his side of the story is. And then he can either have a review hearing where he can fight it, but he has to sit in jail until they have the review hearing, or he can sign off on it, get restructured, and go back to treatment and go back to where he's living. And so that's what he did. And that's why none of the technical violations are contested. It's not that he was avoiding supervision. One of them is he was in the hospital and had his ankle monitor cut off before the ISR agents got there, but it was an emergency hospital visit and he just didn't contest it because he didn't want to have to wait in jail until they could see him to contest it. It was easier to just go back to treatment and sign off on these technical violations, which again didn't have any victims, and there hasn't been a new crime in 13 years. The situation that he would go back to at Alpha wouldn't be the same as when he left Alpha. He would be back in under 24/7 supervision. He wouldn't just get to go back to living with his wife. He would also be under a commitment now if it's a less restrictive alternative. So he would have the commitment hanging over his head. So that would ensure that he would be more compliant with the rules. He would also have a new individualized plan based on the examiner's reports and the concerns of the court and the concerns of the examiners to help guide them in his treatment. And so the situation wouldn't be the same as it had been. It would be, I guess, more secure and more tailored to the concerns of the court. And I think your honors are right that this is a unique case. Many times people are denied a less restrictive alternative because they don't actually have a plan on where they're going to be, when they're going to be there, will they take them, whatever it is. The actual head of Alpha Emergence, a highly respected institution in Minnesota, one of the only other sex offender treatment programs in the state, testified on Mr. Betzler's behalf that he's going to succeed there, that they can make sure the public is safe there, that they have a plan for him, and that they can take him right now. And so that's different than most of the other cases out there. Also, him being under ISR concurrently with his commitment is another difference. There were cases where they were wondering if they could let him out if he was going to be under ISR. Testimony was given that he's going to be under ISR if he's not at the MSOP for the foreseeable future. At no point is he just going to be able to walk into the community and do whatever he wants. And that's, I think, the concern that the examiners have when they're doing their actuarial tests. If left to his own devices without any form of treatment, without any supervision, would he commit a new offense? And the answer is maybe. Is what the examiners gave us. They can't give you a time. They can just say he's more likely than others without anybody looking after him. But that's not the case here. He's under ISR for the foreseeable future, and they are very, very good at what they do. He's under 24-hour supervision at Alpha and 180 degrees. And then he actually hasn't committed a crime in over 13 years. And I think that's very telling, being out in the community and not having hurt anybody I've spoken with Mr. Betzler frequently, and his goal is to complete treatment and get back to his wife and kids. He's actually asking for his wife to be able to have Zoom calls with him at the facility right now. And I know that doesn't pertain to this direct hearing, but he just wants to finish his treatment and get back home. And if he's at the MSOP, that's not going to happen for a very, very long time. They started him over in treatment there, and he was in the community and has shown that he's not going to commit a new crime. And so Mr. Betzler asks that the lower court's decision be reversed, and in the alternative, that he be allowed to go to the Alpha Emergence Program to finish his treatment. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to both counsel. We appreciate your helpful arguments this morning. We will take the matter under advisement and issue our decision within the statutory period. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Your Honors.